Welcome to a special edition of Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. This is, I guess, a retrospective and a reflection of 9/11/01. It's what we all do on this day every year for the past 17 years. And sometimes it's a bittersweet day for me on a lot of different levels. Number one is would have been my dad's 83rd birthday. And of course, that was something we celebrated. And after 9/11, that was something that shifted dramatically for him. And so I've been thinking about him today. And as I pull back and watch all the remembrances and the reflections and the images and all the things that we have, I guess, accumulated over the past 17 years, I think about that day, of course. Remember two things. As I just mentioned, it was my dad's birthday. I called him. It was his 66th birthday. I called him like I did every birthday he had when I was living in Michigan, which was quite a while ago. And we talked about the Cubs and some other things and all like that. And I hung up the phone with him. And shortly after that, my friend Ginny Weissman called me from Chicago. And she said, "Are you watching television?" And I said, "No, I try not to." But I did. And there on the Today Show was what we all know was happening. And those planes going into the towers and the Pentagon and out in Pennsylvania and all the rest of that activity. And over time, like everything in life, it changes tenor and tone, I think, as we learned more about what transpired and what was behind it and all those kind of things. But in those first few days, that first week or so, it was, for many people, the absolute worst time on our soil. For those who were around when Pearl Harbor took place, even though that was in Hawaii and it was in the ocean, it's part of the United States, that was huge. Headlines, plunges us into World War II. This, however, was something that, as I think about it now, was, you know, at the heart of Manhattan and truly on our soil. All those people that went into that building that day that were working and doing their thing, all different backgrounds, all different races, all different creeds, all different religions, all different colors, all different economic status, some multi-millionaires at the top and people cleaning the toilets at the bottom. And all those people were in there just living their lives. And that was erased in a very short amount of time. Then, of course, there's the fallout for the past 17 years of all the first responders and the rescue workers and the people that are still dying to this day because of the asbestos that poured out into the streets of Manhattan. And so the ripple effect of that day is far-reaching, formidable, and should not be forgotten, in my opinion. I've seen some of that today. We need to forget, let it go, move on, stop having wars. Good idea. I don't think that's the case because I think there's lessons learned in there. And if we don't learn them and be reminded once a year of things on a lot of different levels, then those things end up repeating themselves. So in that vein, I had, and I've mentioned this in a couple other prior podcasts, and by the way, for all of you that sent me notes about the Christopher Reeve podcast last week, thanks very much. It was something to listen to, that's for sure. And I think this one is too. 3 days after 9/11, the late, great Dr. Wayne Dyer was a guest on my show, and a gentleman named Steve Rizzo, who I'm still in contact with today, incredible author, great speaker, does some amazing things on the planet. They were both guests on the show. Wayne was booked first. We found Steve as well. And they were talking about all that went on and what was going on from their perspective. I have not listened to this tape for 17 years. So as I was editing it yesterday, I started thinking about not just that show, but I started thinking about the actual 9/11 day. And after I got that phone call from Ginny, I headed into the radio station. And my usual show, I believe at that time, might have been noon to three. And however it all worked out, you know what? It's just really hard to remember if I was on noon to three or three to six. Either way, I got in there about 9:30, 10 o'clock maybe in the morning on 9/11. And I went to go on the air. We were gathering all our stuff and seeing what was happening. Now we were going to do a local broadcast. And the national feed had some guy, I don't know who he is or was, and he was in a tiz. I mean, this guy was falling apart. The world's coming to an end. Arm yourselves. And he was out of L.A. or something. So they got rid of him. We dropped that feed, and I was asked to take over. And so I did that. And as I recall, we stayed on the air pretty much till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So about 8 hours, somewhere in there, 6 to 8 hours in that time span. And the things that were going on locally and the things that were going on nationally were kind of jumbled together. Locally, people were jamming stores, and it was gas prices went up $2. I mean, it was ridiculous on some levels how people were acting. I did the best I could to maintain some sort of demeanor. At the same moment, I'm scared shitless. I don't know what's going on. We're getting bits and pieces, but I would think, at the UP of Michigan, we were pretty safe from the carnage of the East Coast. However, it was a ripple that went through me that I'd never felt in my life. So I did the shows and stayed on the air and handled phone calls. And it was a long, long day. And Anne-Marie, who was my producer at the time, did an outstanding job pulling things together. But what I remember most from that day was not being on the air. It's how it was off the air. I drove home these back roads, and there was this one building, and for some reason the flag was there, and I was so moved to put the flag to half mast. I didn't own it. It was a building. It was like a storage place, and I just did that. I just felt like, yeah, that's kind of how it is right now. The other thing that I remember most was driving past all these churches, and the parking lots were jammed full. I mean, overflowing into the streets, people streaming in to church to pray. I don't know how many of them actually show up on Sundays, but this particular day, they were in there. That was the second thing. It was just overwhelming to me. I went past 3 or 4 churches on my way home. It's about a 20-mile drive, just overflowing. And the third thing is I remember getting home and, of course, hugging the family and all that goes along with it. Then having to do something totally normal to get my sense of self back. So my son Andy and I went out in the yard and threw a baseball till it got dark. And then we carried on from there. And so what you're going to hear, a 30-minute conversation, I've edited some of the commercials and all that stuff out. Wayne Dyer had a book out around that time, literally that week, called There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. And boy, if there was ever a time that title would fit something we were all dealing with, I don't know what else would have been a time like that. There's a spiritual solution to every problem. Now, whether we actually follow through on all that is a whole different show, and I don't know that I got enough time for all that. So I went back and listened to this show, and there's some interesting perspectives in there. And quite frankly, Wayne always saw himself as a global citizen first and foremost. You'll hear that in here, how it was a horrible thing that happened here in New York on 9/11, but he also points out of the people that were being slaughtered in the Congo, million of them, and it barely made the headlines. And on one hand, his perspective was and still is, as I listen to it now, always formidable and always thought-provoking. And I will tell you this as well. When he was doing that on the air, we were getting calls of people who were really pissed off because retribution, find out who it was, kill them all, turn into a parking lot. That was the rally cry of the day. So I give Wayne a lot of credit for standing up in the face of all it and saying, hold on a minute, let's take a look at this objectively and see if we can find some things. So he always brought that sense of perspective to stuff. And one of his great quotes, and I always have enjoyed, was when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. But you have to have the wherewithal to be able to see differently. And over the last 17 years, of course, the world has changed dramatically. There was a time, it's hard to remember, when you didn't have to go all that security at the airport. You didn't have to take your shoes off and all the rest that goes with it. We got plunged into war that cost billions. And truly was a huge shift in human history that we're still feeling the effects of. And the war hasn't ended, it's just changed forms. Steve Rizzo also joined the show. As I mentioned, he's a great author. The first book that I read of his called How to Become a Humor Being. And he was on the air talking about his thoughts on all this and all the pieces of that. So without any further delay or ado, I'll get to it. This is from September 14th, 2001.
a boat out on the
in a time when millions of people in the United States of America are grasping to get some connection to what happened in New York City and in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, here in my own backyard, I started going through the people that I thought had a real connection to looking at the larger picture and the ability to extract and to pass on to those that are grasping some bits of information, some perspective that may in some way, shape, or form alleviate some of the suffering that goes on in the world. Wayne Dyer is a best-selling author of 20 books and has a doctorate in counseling psychology. He lectures across the country to groups numbering in the thousands, and he appears regularly on radio and television. He joins us this afternoon on the road from San Diego, California. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Good afternoon. How are you, John?
I'm doing well, my friend, and you?
Great, thanks.
This new book that I have in front of me here is not actually out on the bookshelves yet, and it's called There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. And your last book was called Wisdom of the Ages, and it comes out sitting here in front of me at a time when, if this is not the greatest challenge for us to find spiritual meaning in a tragedy, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I think you're right. By the way, it is out now.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it's just come out last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the prayer of St. Francis, and I went to Assisi, I spent some time there, San Francesco, who San Francisco is named after, was a celibate little monk who lived for 45 years and died as a saint. And 2 years later, he was declared a saint in the Catholic Church. That usually takes 3 centuries. And what he said to us was, what's the chapter title for each one of these chapters? He said, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. You know, where there is injury, pardon. And then he talked about where there is doubt, faith, where there is despair, hope, where there is sadness, joy. We have a lot of despair, a lot of sadness, a lot of hate in the world, and what will nullify it will not be more of the same. Mm-hmm. What he was teaching us was an 800-year-old technology.
Mm-hmm.
That when you're in a dark room, you don't have to announce to the darkness that you're going to bring a candle in, and the darkness better scurry. When you bring light to a dark room, the darkness dissolves. It's nullified. It can't survive.
Right.
And it's a metaphor for our lives. When we bring love to the presence of hatred, when we look within ourselves, deep within ourselves, and find the place within us that is our highest good, we don't want to react in the same way as those who have reacted in the lowest form humans can act.
Mm. Wayne, when you heard this on Tuesday, what were your immediate thoughts and reactions to what you saw?
Well, John, I really see myself as a global person. I've never really seen myself as an American, or even as a man, or as an older person now, turning in my 60s,
yeah.
And so on. I've never put those kind of labels on myself. I have been as saddened in the last couple of months that over a million people have died in the Congo in these horrible atrocities and wars that are going on there, that 500,000 people down in Indonesia have been slaughtered by Muslims and Christians fighting each other, that there are suicide bombers in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv all the time. That all of these kinds of things, and because this happens to be closer to home,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't change anything for me. It doesn't make me feel any less, or any more outraged than the fact that it could be occurring anywhere. As John Donne said in his famous prayer, in his poem, every man's death diminishes me.
Mm.
He said, therefore never ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. That every single act of violence and hatred and bitterness and anguish and all of and revenge and all of these represent what I call in this new book, I call them lower energies.
Mm-hmm.
And slower energies, and we need to bring a higher and a faster and a spiritual energy to the presence of these things, and like light to darkness, it will nullify it. And I watched the Speaker of the House on TV last night, and he said, let's take a moment of silence. And everybody bowed their head, and the reason that in moments like this that we take a moment of silence is because, God's one and only voice is silence, as Melville said, and we really can't in our own physical worlds and in our own bodies, we can't even begin to know how to handle people jumping out of windows to their death, or buildings crumbling with thousands of people inside of them being just turned into ashes. we don't know how to deal with that in our consciousness. So what we do is we turn it over to God and say, help us to deal with this.
You know, it's interesting. There's been in the last probably 25 years, especially, the steady growing bickering and infighting about, you know, prayer in general, where it's allowed, where it should be, where it shouldn't be, and all of that. And it's always astounding whether it's, again, it's closer to home. Our only reference for most people is what happens in our borders. And whether it's the Oklahoma City bombing or this now or whatever it may be, it always comes back to the same thing, that people always cry out God's name. And then we kind of forget, and we fall asleep a little bit, we get distracted, and next thing you know, we're fighting over it again. And then something big happens, and we all go back to it again. Do you see this? I mean, this has been going on throughout history, though. This is really nothing new.
And it's indicative of where we turn to in moments of crisis. You know, there's one of the great teachings in the Kabbalah is that every fall of our lives provides us with the energy to propel ourselves to a higher place. And you can see that. You can see that in the amount of unity that there is in the country now. I mean, this is a collective fall.
Yeah.
And you can see people, and the stories are just endless on TV of people sacrificing their lives, acts of valor, people not caring about being fatigued, everybody coming together, breaking out spontaneously, singing Amazing Grace, people doing meditations and prayer, people helping each other, being kinder, because basically our instinct within us as human beings is to see ourselves not as human beings, as I've said, having a spiritual experience, but as spiritual beings having a human experience. And in that sense, you know, when you go to sleep tonight and you look at your fingernails, you wake up in the morning, you'll see that they're a little bit longer. Well, there's a force in the universe that grows your fingernails, and it also grows everybody's fingernails. Mm-hmm. Everybody grows everybody's hair. It beats everybody's heart. There's only one force in the whole universe that's doing all of this. And that force is a force of love, and it's in our minds that we have abandoned that force.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole basis behind this book, that we have to change our minds. As Einstein once pointed out, you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it. We have to look at within ourselves in order to say, how can we move away from all of this hatred and bitterness and anxiety and so on, and into a higher, faster, more spiritual place? That's why I wrote this book, and it's amazing that it's out at this time.
I know I told you before you came on the air. Now, you were on the Today Show last week.
Right.
And you're expecting them to, I would imagine, haul you back pretty quick.
Well, they called my publisher and asked if I would be willing to come on next week, so I'm waiting for that phone call now. But to me, it's just a wonderful blessing to be able to go on and talk about let's find within ourselves the ability to transcend and go way beyond the worst behaviors that human beings engage in, which is to hate others and to bomb others. And let's not go out and kill a whole lot more of innocent people to prove that you can't kill our innocent people. We'll kill yours to prove it. Let's look within. Let's hold the people who did this thing responsible, obviously, and let's seek them out and let's make sure that these kinds of organizations, don't flourish in the world. But let's look at our own selves as well and ask how much peace, how much love, how much kindness do we export in contrast to how much of the opposite that we export.
It reminds me of when you have cancer in the body and they go in and they say, here's where the cancer's at, and they don't kill you because of that. They go in and remove it.
Right.
And I was thinking that, you know, with all the radiation and a lot of times the body gets sicker because of all the stuff that's done around that, as opposed to removing, you know, the cause. And I think that's what we're talking about. We've been taking a lot of different views on things. A lot of the people that have been guests on the show and continue to be guests on the show are from the New York area. Steve Rizzo is one of those guys. Been doing radio with Steve for about a year or so, and he is the author of a book called How to Become a Humor Being. He was on his way to a talk in Salt Lake City and abruptly had to land in Omaha, and they made a pretty hasty landing down there. We thought we'd give his perspective as well while you're with us. Okay, Wayne?
Sure.
All right, he joins us this afternoon from Omaha, Nebraska. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fine, my friend. How are you?
Very well. Good. I'm glad that you are safe and sound. That's important in our view of things.
I'm glad also.
And say hello to Wayne Dyer, who's joining us from San Diego.
Hello, Wayne. How are you today?
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Great.
Steve, have you talked to your family back home?
I've been on the phone constantly.
Mm-hmm.
My nephew worked in the World Trade Center, and he was on the stock exchange on the bottom floor, and when the plane first hit, he called up to see if his friends were okay and his boss, and they said, yeah, we're fine, we just can't get down. But they told us that they're sending help soon. And he hung up, and 15 minutes later, the entire building fell down, and they were all killed. So he saw everything firsthand, and it really wasn't a good, you know, a good sight at all for him. Good experience for anybody there, but I, you know, thank God that he's safe, and it's just an incredible thing. And as you folks were saying earlier, it's amazing how it takes a tragedy like that to for everyone to come together. You know, everyone all of a sudden finds their spirit, they find the higher selves, and it's amazing what you do. You don't even think. You automatically respond to helping someone as if it were an extension of yourself. You know, it's like you're almost saving your own life by not thinking, by saving somebody else's. And there were people that ran back into the fire to save people who were having heart attacks, and the person was saved, but the person who was doing the saving wound up dying.
Yeah.
They don't even think. They automatically respond to this way of doing things, and I think that's incredible.
Well, you know, as Wayne was saying before, we in this country, we are so insulated from what's going on in the world. Bill Curtis was going to be joining us today. He couldn't physically bring himself to talk about it because here's a guy that travels the world. You see him on A&E every night. He talks about investigative reports. He's been doing environmental work for a long time. He actually came up and spent some time with us up here in Michigan. And he's been saying, until something happens in this country, we have deaf ears and blind eyes.
Yeah, I think the ironic thing, too, is there I was on my way giving a speech to 2,500 people on how to enjoy themselves in spite of adversity of any kind. And, you know, and then there were people just telling me, well, how do you find the humor in this? How do you enjoy yourself with this? And, you know, the answer is that I don't think you find it. I think it just comes to you.
Right.
And, you know, it's like your humor being glows sometimes in moments like this. And I was pretty surprised when I was watching this one fireman who was on the 87th floor, and there were a few different interviews on him, and he was on the 87th floor, and the building collapsed, and he went down all 87 flights, and the woman, the reporter said to him, well, how is it that you went down 87 flights and you only broke a leg? And he goes, hey, I'm a New York fireman. What do you want? See, yeah. Even in a moment like that, your humor being glows, you know, and even though if it was just a few seconds, There was enough relief there, you know. Just that, it's amazing how you can find it even in a situation like that.
Wayne, your book comes out, and you know, this is, I don't think it's a coincidence. You and I have done so many shows over the years, and we've talked about the coincidences are not what they seem to be. Well, I've watched your career over the years go from the Tonight Show kind of stuff to more human performance type stuff. And if I look at the cover of this book, this is what most people are doing today in our country, sitting just like you are.
Yeah, that picture was taken when I didn't even know it was being taken. It was taken in Assisi after a miracle had just occurred. I had taken a group of people over there last October, and I was in the middle of writing this book, and I guess it was a year ago, October. And there was a young man on the trip who had cerebral palsy. His name is John. He was just 22 years old, and he had to wear braces on his legs from his knees down, and we were walking up the castle there to get to the third floor to see where St. Clair of Assisi had died, and he really desperately wanted to see this place. And when we got into the castle, the staircase narrowed considerably, and he couldn't bend his legs, he couldn't move his legs out to the side because it was too narrow in there, and so he couldn't negotiate the stairs any longer. And I said to him, I said, John, I said, get on my back, and I'll just carry you up the stairs, and I'll just straddle you over my back. Well, I went up four or five stairs, and I forgot something. First, I forgot that I was 60 years old, I think. And the second thing I forgot was that that I had had a very bad knee injury, and that I had been told that I had to have surgery on it. Ligaments were torn. And I wore a brace all the time when I played tennis and when I ran and everything. And of course, I didn't have the brace there because I wasn't running or playing tennis. But all of a sudden, I felt my knee beginning to go and collapse. And I had a vision of John collapsing on top of me and us tumbling down all these stairs in this ancient castle and all the people behind us in this big human ball. And all of a sudden, my knee just righted itself, and I felt this incredible surge of energy. I saw Francesco, who I've said this prayer every day, I think, for the last 20 years of my life. And I not only walked up the rest three more flights of stairs, but I ran up there with him on my back. And when we got to the top, everyone said, you're not even out of breath. How could you have done that?
Wow.
And I went outside, and I just was leaning over the balcony, looking over Assisi there, and someone snapped that picture. And to this day, it's now been, it'll be 2 years in October. I've never worn the brace since. I play singles tennis on it all the time. It's totally, completely healed. I've never even had a twinge in there. And it all happened right there in Assisi. It was an absolute stunning miracle. And I think this prayer of St. Francis, the life of St. Francis, of Francesco, the whole technology, I've discovered that it's really an 800-year-old technology that... When we go within ourselves, when we're in things called problems, all we have to do is bring something higher and something more spiritual to the presence of it, and it simply can't survive. And that's what we have to do collectively as a nation now.
Listen, we're going to take our first break. Wayne Dyer joining us on the road in San Diego, California, and Steve Rizzo on the road in Omaha, Nebraska. We're talking about Wayne's brand new book. It's called There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. It is tough oftentimes to remind ourselves of what we have forgotten, but if we don't, we are doomed to repeat it. And I think everybody's had about enough of that. We'll take a quick time out. Take care of the people that take care of us. Power Talk Radio continues after this.
Hi, this is Barbara DeAngelis, author of Secrets About Life Every Woman Should Know. Stay tuned for more Power Talk Radio with John St. Augustine on News Talk 600 WCHT.
We are back, Power Talk Radio, on News Talk 600 WCHT. Best-selling author Wayne Dyer joining us this afternoon from San Diego, California, and on the road in Omaha, Nebraska, Steve Rizzo as well. Wayne, I was asking this off the air, and there seems to be, you know, especially when things get difficult, when there is a tragedy out or people are confused or don't know where to turn, somebody like yourself, you're going to get on the Today Show, you're going to say the things you're going to say, just like you said on this show about your book, There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. And I know you're not pushing the book, you're pushing the message that comes through you that then becomes a book. But people are going to say, look, you know, well, Wayne will handle it. You know, if he's at this level where these things happen, well, maybe we'll just let him do it. And I think it might have even been you that said one time on this show that that's why we have elected officials, because no one else wants the job.
Right.
Are we in a position now where we're going to have to start digging inside ourselves to manifest what we intend to live, the world we live in?
Well, we don't have any other option anyway. You know, to think that somebody else is doing it for us is really an illusion. It's just our way of convincing ourselves that we don't have to take responsibility. The fact is that each and every one of us are connected to spirit, whether we like it or not. You know, there's an invisible part of us, and we all have a divinity, and most of us are terrified of it. And we all are responsible for our conduct, and collectively we are nothing more than the collective choices that we have been making as a people. And we have to do, you know, I've often said, you've heard me say it, that this is a round planet, and on a round planet there's no choosing up sides. That the condition of our world is a function of the consciousness of each and every one of us, and collectively it shows up in these kinds of choices that we have made. And it isn't really all that surprising that an airplane would be flown into the World Trade Center. We think that that's outrageous, but it's not any more outrageous than sitting in an air-conditioned tower someplace on an aircraft carrier and pushing a button and raining bombs down in Baghdad, or in someplace in southern Iraq, or any place else where we think that. And that, to me, if you're the person whose home is accidentally bombed, as a result of one of these things dropping because we have advanced technology, we're still all a part of that. You know, you can't make napalm, for example, which is designed to do nothing but just burn the flesh off of human beings, unless a whole phalanx of people get involved. Somebody has to build it, somebody has to invent it, somebody has to cart it and crate it, and somebody has to put it on airplanes, and somebody has to distribute it, and somebody has to drop it, and all it takes is one person in that chain who says, this is not right, this is wrong, we shouldn't be doing this, I'm going to stop doing this, and that chain gets broken, and napalm cannot be gone from the mind of someone to the reality of a child having their skin burned off. We have to take responsibility, each and every one of us, for our actions. I remember my nephew, who was working for Ford at one time, and they assigned him to some weapons place where they were working on some kind of nuclear something or other, that, and he just was so opposed to what it was that they were doing and what they were going to build that he decided to pull out. And I said, he became an artist, and he's a very successful artist today. But he said, I won't be one person. And then, well, if enough people have that kind of courage and that kind of willingness to live their life for peace rather than in creating more weapons of destruction and so on, these kinds of things will stop. And it took a whole chain of events and people to create what happened here in New York the day before yesterday. And all of us need to take responsibility for it. And all of us need to look within and find a spiritual solution to the conflicts of our own life, the conflicts in our families, the conflicts in our communities, in our countries, in our entire universe as well.
Steve, one of the things that you are known for is going out, as you mentioned, and getting people to laugh, not only at ourselves, but the conditions that we create in our lives. Has this changed your resolve in any way, shape, or form to go out and do it a little bit bigger and a little bit broader?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it gives me more incentive, because it's not to, what I'm, you know, it's not to negate the fact that you're not supposed to mourn. You are. But we do have to find laughter in between the pain. We have to. If we don't, and laughter is part of the spirit, as Wayne is talking about, there is a spiritual solution to everything, and I believe that there always has been, always. It's just that people don't realize it.
Well, one of the best ways, Steve, to find out, I always tell audiences, one of the best ways to determine whether you're on a spiritual path or not, or whether you're moving toward enlightenment, is to ask yourself, how cheerful are you?
Exactly.
You know, when you're coming home from work, are you morose? Are you looking forward to having a drink and complaining about the traffic and finding fault with your wife and with your children? Imagine all of those people who went into the World Trade Center the other day and the things that they may have been upset about on their way to work that day. You know, whether the subway was working or not, whether their wife or their husband said the wrong thing, or, you know, and all of those kinds of things. And if they had that chance to knowing that this was the last day that they were going to have, would they want to have been in conflict, or would they want to be lasting?
Great.
I was on the show the day before yesterday with a woman named Laura Buxton here in San Diego. And I said, I saw you got remarried, huh? She's in her 50s. And she said, yeah. She said, I married a Boy Scout. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, she said, this guy's a lawyer, but he's the kind of lawyer who's really on the side of the angels. And she said, the thing about him is that I love so much is he makes me laugh. She said, we even laugh when we're doing it, you know?
That's funny.
And she said, that's the best part of it. And
yeah.
You know, the people that you love the most are the ones that make you laugh and make you feel
you're
terrible.
Exactly right. Because humor, and as I call it, your humor being is of your higher self. It's
right.
The part of you that brings out the best in you when times get really tough.
Yeah.
And people they make life more difficult than it has to be. And as I said, you know, it doesn't mean you're not supposed to mourn, you're not supposed to feel, but you are. That's part of the healing process. All I'm saying is you can't stay there. You know, there has to be a time when you got to say, I got to move forward. And one of the things that helps you move forward is an appreciation for life, for what you have left. And the way to appreciate that, as Wayne was just saying, is laughter. That we have a problem in this country, especially. There is a difference. We have stifled our laughter genes. And there is a difference between laughing at something that's very serious and laughing off the fear that represents it.
Good point. And
I think what we need to do is get back to laughing off the fear. And, you know, if you ever see the sitcom MASH, you know, you see Alan Alda, there's times when he's in this operating room and the lights are out, he's being bombarded, he's holding a kid's liver in his hand, blood splurting all over the place, and what is he doing? He's cracking a joke. Now, by cracking a joke, he's not negating the seriousness of the subject matter at all.
Well, he's helping himself to deal with it.
Yeah, his humor being is the only saving grace he has in a place where there seems to be so little hope. As, if anything, it's giving him strength to move forward. And that is from the spirit. It's jazzing his spirit.
Listen, you guys, we got to take a short break. Wayne Dyer joining us from San Diego, California, a long way from Florida, but still his home nonetheless. And Steve Rizzo out in the middle of the country in Omaha, Nebraska. We'll continue with this. We'll take a quick time out. Take care of the people that take care of us. The most powerful hours on radio in America. Continue with more right after this. Wayne Dyer's new book is out on the shelves everywhere. It's called There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. He is also the best-selling author of 21 other books. And the latest before this was Wisdom of the Ages. And he is joining us this afternoon from San Diego, California, where he is holed up in a motel room for a little bit. And on the road in Omaha, Nebraska, Steve Rizzo, author of How to Become a Humor Being, is also joining us as well. I guess I didn't really finish, Wayne, what I was saying before is, what is there any, I know your answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway, is there any pressure whatsoever to feel like you're going to be able to bring this message to people that will change things? Is there any pressure to that whatsoever? Because people are hungry now for something that's going to set them in a new direction.
No, I never feel any pressure. I really don't feel like I'm even doing this. I just really feel like I just go where I'm sent and do what I'm told. Shakespeare had a wonderful line. You know, he said, "Go to thy bosom, knock there, and ask your heart what it doth know." Ask your heart. And my heart directs me to speak about these kinds of things. I know there's an enormous amount of pressure on people in this country to retaliate, to go out and to nuke them. I've even heard a senator, a United States senator, speaking about, if we have to kill their innocent people, we'll do it. They didn't care about ours. I know that there's people in all walks of life who have that kind of a mentality. I really believe that the problem itself is hatred. It's not who hates who, but it's hatred itself. And that when you join into that kind of energy, and I believe in the message of the greatest spiritual teachers who've ever walked among us, in every religious persuasion, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or whomever, that these were people who were teaching us to find within ourselves, and it's particularly in times of evil. Even Jesus said, "Resist not evil," because he was saying that there really is, there's only one force in the universe. It's just, it's a force that's going in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just turning it around, changing our mind, finding the peace within ourselves and delivering it that will transform the world. I believe that. I know it to be true. And I don't think that more killing is going to solve the problem of killing. I think that more love will.
Wayne, are we at that time where this can go a whole new direction? I mean, they always say, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. And we have not been around very long in this country, 200 some odd years. Is this a pivotal time for us where we can really find a new way?
I think there's no other choice to make anyway. That is the way humanity has to go. You look at something like the Holocaust, for example, and you look at all of those people that were tortured and all of those people that went to concentration camps, and you think, why would they have to do such a thing? And yet something comes up a generation or two later called ethnic cleansing over in Yugoslavia and the Balkans, and the whole world is outraged. And we remind ourselves of what happened on this planet when we cleaned out those concentration camps. And the word was out that never again, we'll never allow such a thing to occur again. And we brought it to a halt. I mean, the world's pressure brought it to a halt. To me, that means that those people, as horrible as it was, didn't die in vain, that we grow from these kinds of things. And, we were exploding nuclear weapons into the atmosphere, when I was just a young man, and assuming that this was all okay. We were doing it over New Mexico. We were doing it out in the Pacific, and all these mushroom clouds and radiation going into the atmosphere. And we began to realize that this is a horrible thing. Then France decided just a short time ago to do an underwater nuclear explosion, and the entire world decided that they were going to boycott all French wines, and that the protest was so strong because we grow from the kinds of mistakes that we've made. And this thing here in New York, along with so many of the acts of terrorism, will bring out the very best in all of us, and it will help us to move towards being more peaceful, more loving, more kind, more of the souls that Saint Francesco spoke about in the 13th century.
Steve, final thoughts?
Well, I agree with what Wayne was saying when you asked him that question. Is there any pressure? I think doing what he does and doing what I do, you go where you're sent. And you just know you're making some kind of a difference, but you also know not everyone is going to buy what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't concentrate on that. You just concentrate that you have a calling. You do what you feel you need to do. And you just know somehow, some way you are making a difference, and that's all you could hope for.
Hey, you a New Yorker.
Hey, and they better listen to me anyway.
Hey, that's right.
That's right. Listen, I appreciate you guys' time today. It's good to get your perspective. Wayne's going to be back with us in a couple weeks. We're going to dig into his new book, There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. And Steve, I hope you get home safe soon to your wife. And
I will. And Wayne, I have to tell you, I appreciate everything you've done for me.
Thank you, sir.
I've read everything you've done, and you've helped my life tremendously in so many ways.
Thank you.
I thank you for that, and I'm glad I have the opportunity to even speak with you in this conversation.
Likewise.
And to thank you personally.
I appreciate what you're doing as well. God bless you, my friend.
Hold on, you guys.
As hard as I try, it's like a song I can hear playing right in my ear. I can't sing, I can't help listening, and I can't help feeling stupid standing around. Crying is the easier down, 'cause I know that you'd rather we were dancing.
You know, they always say those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I mentioned earlier in this little clip about Bill Curtis, who I had asked if he wanted to come on and talk about it. He was literally so overcome with emotion because of that thought, because we don't learn very quickly. And his stuff leans, as mine does many times, towards the environmental. We don't learn things, so we just keep repeating it. And it takes a 9/11 on many levels to wake people up. Out of everything Wayne talked about in that clip, the thing that got me the most is he said, you know, something to the effect like, this can be a catalyst to wake us up, make us better people, live life differently. I think there's our people who have done that. But if you look at politics and the whole kumbaya thing on the nation's capital, the steps of the Capitol, when Congress came out and all saying, God bless America, and Amazing Grace, and all held hands, that lasted about 3 weeks till finger pointing started. So I don't know why it is that we have to wait till shit totally hits the fan and we stand in front of the fan covered in shit to go, oh, shit. But we do. Without making this, trivializing 9/11, I think on some level we all have these wake-up calls all the time. And we ignore them. And then they get louder and louder and louder until we find ourselves sitting in the emergency room of life going, holy shit. Yet all that time we had the opportunities to make changes, then we didn't. And that seems to be the species that we are. We're great at closing the door after everything has hit the fan. You know, one time with the airport, and that was it. One time. We're good now. Well, no, not so much. It may not have happened that way, but it's been done other ways. So, hindsight is 20/20. It's only 20/20 if you actually take in consideration what you've learned and applied. Otherwise, I still think we're kind of blind to a lot of things. So on this 9/11, I'm thinking about the families of those who did not come home from the towers that day, and the Pentagon, and the crew, and the passengers of Flight 93, and how they responded in their last moments, and how the perspective and perception of our lives changed for a little while when we were down on our knees in church, or just on your knees in general, and thankful just to be alive. And all of a sudden, politics didn't matter, and the sports didn't matter. All the diversions and the distractions fell away. And then they start rolling back up again. And I think underneath everything that I've done, all the books I write, everything is to say, make sure that you keep your perspective and your perception. Otherwise, the wake-up calls come, and the louder they get, the more they hurt. Until next time, safe travels. Thanks for subscribing and listening. Adios.